This episode of the Android Central podcast is brought to you by ShopAndroid.com. Save 10% on your entire order by using the coupon code AC10. That's AC10 at checkout.
Hey there, everybody, and welcome to the Android Central podcast. It is episode number 242 for Friday, June 26th, 2015. Welcome to the show. I'm Phil Nickinson. I'm reaching over here to adjust things from the beginning. Mixers, sound stuff. Welcome to the show. How goes it? June's almost over, by the way.
Woo-hoo!
Just in case 26 wasn't an indicator for that. What happened? Where did that come from? Man. So, if it's your first time joining us, welcome. We do this every Friday, which is today. It's been a weird week. I don't know about you guys, but my brain's a little fried. It's been like non-smartphone news, just crazy with stuff. But we're going to do this, right? You guys ready? Alex, you ready?
I am prepared. Let's do it.
Jerry Russell. Alex Jerry Russell, for those of you who don't know them.
We're one Borg. Alex Jerry Russell. It's
Are you guys a hive mind?
One three-headed human.
That would be one ugly human being. I'm sorry. I love you guys, but what? Tell me
my
I'm wrong.
My heart is broken.
Tell me I'm wrong.
I always thought of myself as the pretty one. I couldn't even say that with a straight face.
This explains everything. So, let's just kind of get into it. I mentioned earlier today, I want to talk a good little bit about unlock stuff. Jerry's been kind of in the middle of this, and Alex had some interesting thoughts overnight. We're in this weird space where you've got, you know, your normal flagship phones. You got your Galaxy S6, you got your G4, you got your, to a lesser extent, M9. Motorola, I guess we're kind of waiting on new stuff, right?
Yeah.
But I think, yeah, most of the stuff still probably classes as flagship level right now.
I mean,
it's a different kind of priority, though.
Yeah, and for us, it's we're getting up to, like, what, 10 months of Moto X 2014 now, so it's not like it's long in the tooth, and it actually just got the official Android 5.1 build like today, overnight, which I guess one of us will have to use it because it's been a while and see.
That's Andrew's. Well, it used to be his daily. Mm-hmm. He'll probably have a lot of good.
It was mine for a long time too.
Yep, same here.
Absolutely. But yeah, it just, I don't know. It kind of wore on, so we'll see, and we'll have to, you know, check on the guys in the forums and see how that's going.
Yeah.
But yeah, so we're in this weird space where you've got, you know, your GS6 and you've got your G4, but you've also got these not new companies. I mean, specifically, we've been talking to Jerry, you know, kind of the top three, Huawei, Alcatel, OneTouch, and Asus. And yep. It's not like any of those is a new company.
No. I mean, they've all been around forever. Just haven't hit anybody's radar with anything. I think that should change. It may not change. It hit my radar. It hit Phil's radar. It should hit your radar because there's a lot of good stuff worth looking at now.
I think that's the big difference. And this is really what Alex started talking about early this morning, was that there's less of a gulf between flagship phones now and these so-called mid-level phones, right?
It's, yeah, I think what I would say is that you have now kind of a new category, if you like, of high-end mid-range phones, if that makes sense. So the mid-range stuff is that much better than it used to be relative to the high-end. And it's getting to the point now where if you have a flagship phone which doesn't quite hit the mark, you know, the M9 maybe would be an example that some people are disappointed with the camera or whatever. You get a device that does that, then suddenly it doesn't just, you know, fall behind in terms of the high-end competition. It also has a lot of really, really, you know, good competition in terms of this mid-range stuff, devices from the companies you already mentioned, Huawei, Asus, and, you know, even lesser known names like OnePlus and Oppo. I have an Oppo R7 here, which is a great phone. So it's really, I think the difference this year compared to last year is that the mid-range stuff is just that much better. And if for the vast majority of people, okay, there are differences. If you get a flagship phone, you're probably going to get a really great camera versus a just decent, pretty okay camera. But for most people, these new mid-range devices will be just perfectly fine for everything you want from a smartphone.
I would not be afraid to recommend the Zenfone 2 or the Idol 3 to anybody looking for a new smartphone. I mean, they're every bit as good or better than the Galaxy S5 that you can buy from your carrier, locked to your carrier, for more money.
And we were talking about this as well before. What's the incentive now to buy a year-old flagship when you have phones that are the same price or cheaper that do basically the same, more and are more up-to-date, and of course you're in such a much better position for updates because of that?
Right. I wouldn't be afraid to tell somebody, you know, buy a Moto X for $300. That's a current phone that's maybe a little bit better than some of these mid-range unlock phones. But when you have to go to the AT&T store, buy a year-old Samsung Galaxy S5, and it's still locked to AT&T, it's still going to be slow to get updates, it's still going to have potential security issues that never get patched, maybe you're better off looking elsewhere.
And I guess the difference is, okay, the Moto X is coming up on a year old now. With Motorola, right, you have a different attitude towards updates, really. Yeah, that's a big priority for them versus other manufacturers. And of course,
So for me, that's kind of my first big question is, where do we stand on updates? Do we know that Alcatel is going to push them out, that Asus is going to? And Asus actually has an interesting forum for their updates. Well, maybe you have to do something on that where, you know, you can pretty clearly see what's coming out. Mm-hmm. You know, or Huawei. I mean, like, do we have, I mean, one of Huawei's big new phone, you know, just launched with Lollipop, but then the P8 Lite didn't. And so it's like,
the Lite launched with KitKat, but the regular P8 did launch with Lollipop, but it was Lollipop with a bunch of issues. There was some stuff that, you know, didn't quite work right with integration of Google Apps, a really, really basic thing for an Android phone. And some stuff that was just straight up broken on the shipping phone, where like Android Wear didn't work, your notification listeners didn't work. So I think maybe there they decide, okay, we've got KitKat, it works, we'll ship that on the P8 Lite and worry about patching it up to Lollipop later. Neither is ideal. And of course, I think, you know,
neither is acceptable.
acceptable. It's not okay to be releasing a KitKat phone at this point. But yeah, most Huawei phones, besides Huawei phones that ship with Lollipop, which is at the minute only one, I believe, you're still on KitKat. The Mate 7 from last year that we saw at IFA, still on KitKat. There are pre-released Lollipop builds you can try, but nothing official yet. And actually, Oppo released the R7 again with KitKat, with a very skinned version of KitKat. So their UI looks pretty much the same, whether it's 5.0 or 4.4, but still not an ideal situation to be in. And maybe it is just a case of different priorities for different markets, right? A lot of the Chinese manufacturers have a heavily skinned UI. Doesn't look that different depending on which version you're running. And maybe as more of them start to push into the US, into the Western markets, they'll just have to adjust their attitude towards updates. And who knows? Maybe that'll be a task for the next year for them.
Well, I know these companies recognize the value of breaking into the Western market. You look at their advertisements. I talk to these people. I email them. They know that that's what's important at this moment in time. Let's break into the Western market where traditionally phones are bought from the carrier, and in North America, you know, subsidized from the carrier. They also understand that for users, updates are important. You know, they get it. Whether that means that they'll follow through or not, we have to give them a chance. But they do understand how important this stuff is, which makes me, you know, optimistic.
And by the way, and this is relatively new, but July 27th is going to be the OnePlus 2 officially. Now, I mean, they're going to drag it out until then, right?
I can't wait to hear how big the screen's going to be.
I just want them to do a better job than they did the last time, because it was a hell of a phone that nobody cared about because of blunders with the way they sold it.
I think there are a couple of angles. There was the way they sold it, right? There was the invite system, which was just frustrating, and the whole pipe beasting that went on around that, with not just, you know, with a whole ecosystem around just the ability to buy the phone, which is kind of ridiculous. Mm-hmm. There was also sort of the the PR drama side of things of being a new company and not really being able to get on top of PR blunders, you know, as quickly as another company might, doing, you know, making sort of schoolboy errors, doing stupid things online. But you know, it's a year on. they must have learned from that. They've obviously learned that the way they announced it last year with a slow drip of information was effective, because that's exactly what they're doing again. And we'll no doubt find out very, very slowly over the next month or so whether it lives up to the hype.
And they've got us talking about it.
Yeah. So
it worked.
Russell's being really quiet now. Come on. You gotta have an opinion.
There's a lot of questions about the OnePlus 2 that aren't going to get answered until I've got hands on it. And a big part of that, which is the same thing that happens with all of these budget phones, is the software. I mean, as impressive as the hardware has gotten from some of these, kind of mid-tier manufacturers, the software from Samsung and LG and Motorola have all gotten really good. And when I sit side by side with some of these phones, especially the most recent Alcatel, that felt really nice when I picked it up and held it and messed around with it. But mm-hmm. then I went and went through the software, and it just really bugged me, some of the things that these guys are doing. And, you know, we're going to see a pretty close to stock-ish experience on the OnePlus 2, because I'm pretty sure they're going with their Oxygen OS, which is going to be cool. But it's also something that we saw with the OnePlus 1, what they did with Cyanogen OS, and then they kept bolting stuff onto it that really kind of upset people. And that's something that they said from the beginning, was that they were going to continue with these software partners, and they were going to continue to do things that they felt were better. So, you know, it'll be really interesting to see where it goes, but I'm not nearly as optimistic as I was last time.
Not making that mistake twice, huh?
Right.
So, Jerry, I mean, you've got... I keep calling them the big three, and I guess we need to think beyond that, because OnePlus.
No, that's fair right now. I mean, if OnePlus shows off this phone, you know, next month, and they say, okay, we understand that, you know, we probably can't meet all the demands, but we've got a million of them up for pre-order. Just go here and pre-order it, and when we have no more, we'll try to build more. That's, you know, I think that's the best they can do. And then they move up out of the hype beast realm into, you know, this is what they can do, and I don't have to have a bad taste in my mouth when I think about it.
You think they definitely will go with an invite system again? You think there's any chance of just it being up for sale and
who knows?
Go buy it.
It would be really, really nice, but the what stopped them before was the whole, you know, economics at scale. They can't sell to that many people at once because they're building things and selling them at cost. And that hasn't changed. The OnePlus One didn't get cheaper to manufacture, and their PR departments didn't get cheaper to pay to do stuff. And now they're paying even more because they're paying for software development for the people that are doing Oxygen OS, whereas they didn't have a financial arrangement with the Cyanogen OS guys. So if anything, the OnePlus Two is going to be more expensive for OnePlus to manufacture. So it would be really nice if they came out and said, hey, these things are for sale, but they've got more running against them this time than they did last time.
I'm kind of curious what you guys think of the long-term game plan for them, because you don't make money, you know, just selling your product at cost by definition. So, I mean, is this just a way into a niche Western market for Oppo? Is that just a game plan to get the name out there and eventually build on it? Where do you guys think this is going?
I think that that's part of it. I also think that they've made pretty successful, inroads in accessories. They announced Google Cardboard earlier this week as their own special version of Google Cardboard that is literally identical to the version that Google announced at I/O a couple weeks ago. Only they hyped it up and said that it was super better and, you know, could do all of these things a little differently. And, you know, they're going to sell them for $25 a pop. Whereas, you know, the I'm Cardboard site is cheaper and available in other colors, and it takes a little while longer to get there because it's coming from China. So, you know, if you take a look at their accessories page, their wood backs and stuff like that, they're making a killing on these accessories because there are no way that those things are priced at cost. And we've seen that. We've not seen that strategy often in smartphones, but we've definitely seen that in the PC landscape and in gaming. So it's not popular in the smartphone world, but it actually seems to be working as far as the accessories go. Because, I mean, especially stuff like the USB cable, people love that flat red USB cable that kind of fits in everything. And I'm partly guilty for that. I'm a sucker for flat USB cables.
But it's a really nice cable.
Yeah.
I remember a lot of people getting excited about a battery at one point.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, they have a separate battery that they're selling now, and a whole bunch of stuff. And they've done pretty reasonable inroads around more communities than just the smartphone community. They did a huge contest for 3D printing that led to just an enormous amount of 3D printed OnePlus One accessories available across all of the 3D printing services. So it was one of the coolest things when I was doing 3D printing stuff for Android Central. I just assumed there was 3D printing stuff for all smartphones, but it really was just the OnePlus One.
So Jerry, go back to what I was calling the big three, Jerry, the Idol 3, the Zenfone 2, and
the P8 Lite.
And the P8 Lite. Which one out of those three at this point would you pick? No pressure.
Would I pick? I would pick the Alcatel.
Yeah.
I like the software on it a little bit better than the Zenfone software. As far as the hardware side and how well they operate and feel when you're holding them and that kind of jazz, either one is acceptable. The P8 Lite still has some software bugs that need to be ironed out before I would be comfortable recommending that to anybody. If you're an Android nerd and you like to tinker with things, you know, maybe that's for you. It's probably feels and looks the best of all of them. Let's be honest. It has that Galaxy S6 / iPhone / Nexus 4 feel about it. But literally, you can't go wrong if you buy the Idol 3. That's my gut call after using them all.
So, by the way, we've got more coming. This showed up in my mailbox the other day. Axon, which is...
That looks interesting, too.
Yeah, so they sent me some cardboard, too. It was weird. I had gotten a press release or something from them a couple weeks ago and just ignored it. Wasn't a company I knew. I remember seeing it because it was a weird name, but you know, archived it, done. And then Sasha Sagan from PC Mag unearthed that it's actually ZTE doing this under another name.
It's gonna be right.
Yeah. Oh, sure.
James and I didn't ignore it. James Falconer.
Well, so that's true.
More
on that later.
Yeah.
I've talked to James. So they're doing something in New York on the 14th. So we'll get something else from them. I mean, we'll see. Who knows? I mean, the point is this whole unlocked space is just getting big, right? And it's getting big and it's getting good.
And fast. This time last year, what's the best unlocked phone? Well, if you're going to buy an unlocked Android phone, buy the Moto G because the other cheaper unlocked models just aren't there yet.
And we're not talking like SIM-unlocked, you know, Euro imports.
Unbranded, right. Free from a carrier. You buy it from Amazon. It's yours to do whatever you want with.
Properly banded.
Yes.
To work in North America.
Yes. Which is important because a lot of the previous unlocked phones, like we'd import a Galaxy S5, they didn't work the greatest on all your carriers in North America.
I mean, is the Moto G even in the discussion anymore?
I think it's a tier below the device we've been talking about. It's, what is it, just about 130 now? That seems to ring a bell. I know there's the 40 version that's available somewhere.
Yeah, 139, 149, something like that.
Yeah, I mean, it's a tier below. It's if you want to get right down to it, it's half the price of some of these other devices we're talking about. So it's probably a level below, but it is still unlocked. You can still buy it, do whatever you want with it. The same kind of thing, just at a lower price.
But you don't have the better hardware, better software, better internals that you do from some of these newer ones that are between $250 and $300.
That's true. I mean, the internals of the second gen Moto G are basically the same as the first. It's hardware is getting on a little bit.
At this point, I would almost recommend the Moto E over the Moto G, because while it's not the best internals, it's newer. It's a newer model, will be supported a little bit longer, and it has LTE outside of Brazil. But I think that we needed to create a new tier for these new unlocked phones because they're slightly better than what you're going to buy from Moto's cheap end.
Hey, by the way, Andrew Martinick just showed up. Hi, Andrew.
I have a point to make about what Jerry was talking about, if that's cool.
Thanks for joining us.
I was just going to say, because I just went through that exact same thing. My brother broke his phone And so he was looking for something cheap and unlocked, you know, under $200. And I at first I thought Moto G, but then just like Jerry said, I thought, you know, you go with a Moto E, you're getting LTE, you're getting basically the same software and performance, and you're getting a device that's a year newer in terms of updates and everything like that. And it just made a lot more sense, and it was cheaper.
I think we should stop calling high-end phones flagship phones. I think the presentation that Jerry and I saw from Facebook at the big Android meet and greet, that was the most logical way to categorize phones that I have ever heard. It just made the most sense, and I wish I had like a recording of it that I could just push people to. But it was the way that Facebook categorizes phones when they decide what version of their app is going to go to what, and how things like data access and image quality and stuff like that gets determined. It's really important on a server side for them, but the way that they classify devices was just so logical that it could, I just felt like it could be applied to everything.
Agreed. It's good for the users, and that's my biggest concern. I'm always an advocate for developer and developer tools, but the users are my main concern. And the ideas Facebook had just make sense in something probably everybody with a big software, you know, house should consider looking at.
I'm trying to find. I started writing something last year sometime. I think I got rid of it, about why we shouldn't call these flagships. I mean, think of what flagship used to mean, right? I mean, and when I hear flagship, I think Nimitz. That's the word that comes to mind.
Giant boat.
Yeah, I mean, and
the biggest guns.
The biggest and best of its class. And we just mean the most important phone to a carrier, basically, or to a manufacturer.
And
it's sort of a writing crutch, I think, that we need this one word thing to call this, you know, new phone of the year.
Mm. And often the phones that are the most important and best selling or most profitable, the carriers, are not the high end ones.
Look at HTC.
Yeah.
For example.
It's devices that are down there at the sub $99 on contract that in a month or two are free on contract, and they're just throwing them out the door by the thousands.
Yeah.
And yeah, we've talked about Motorola before, same thing with Moto. By far the more important phone for them is the Moto G over the past couple of years.
That's been their number one seller by a large margin, just because they're selling it in South America and selling it in India.
Yeah.
Desire is bigger for HTC.
Yep.
So, yeah, I mean, it's...
But Desire is an interesting one because it covers a very wide range of devices as well. I mean, that's from cheap stuff to their higher-end stuff just in Asia. We'll get the Desire name.
It's... If Samsung sells 50 million Galaxy S6s like they predicted, and they sell 120 million phones, that means that, 70 million of them weren't their high-end phone?
Mm-hmm. And we're seeing Samsung having their own sort of answer to that line now with the Galaxy A series. There's three discrete spec and screen size points. And like a lot of these Chinese manufacturers, even at that lower price point, you're looking at really solid construction, decent specs, decent performance, just a solid core experience, and then building on that at the higher end with the Galaxy S series.
We just always see the Galaxy S series more, you know, pushed more in the Western markets, obviously. But the Galaxy A series is huge.
It's because the phones in the Western markets get pushed by people like Verizon and AT&T. That's what it comes down to. They can make more money if they get you to buy this phone because it takes you longer to pay it off.
I think, and this is why I want us writing about it. I think as consumers, as customers, we're going to do ourselves a lot of favors if we look beyond that at this point. And I guess, and maybe that's what we look at, Jerry. And again, it goes back to what Alex was saying. What do you lose out if you put down the GS6 or you put down the G4 and you pick up one of these other phones? What feature for feature, what is it you're going to have to trade off? And there are always trade-offs. But
sure.
I think you've got to look at what areas of smartphone hardware have yet to plateau. And I think the main one is probably the camera. And, you know, maybe upgrade priority, but I think it's mainly just imaging is the main one. And you could say maybe screen resolution, though we're starting to hit the point of diminishing returns there as well. And it's going to be really interesting over the next couple of years to see when inevitably things like 2K screens and maybe OIS cameras and some of the more advanced stuff, when that reaches this sort of sweet spot in the mid to high end, okay, what's the next big thing then that the flagships, if you want a better word, have to have to stop people just buying in at the lower level?
Half the flagships don't have OIS anyway.
But I mean, if you pick up the Zenfone or the Idol or the P8 Lite, and you look at the screen, it's sure it's not as good as the G4 or the F6, but it's plenty good enough. You're not gonna pick it up and say, "Oh my God, I hate this screen." Maybe a year and a half ago, you would have said that had you picked up a $200 unlock phone. Same goes for the camera. It's not the greatest. It's every bit as good as any Android phone's camera was in 2013. So that's going to follow. I mean, I'm excited as, you know, what we're going to see next year and the year after.
I think it's important that we also not discount software performance.
Right.
And while that's less noticeable as we're jumping from app to app, doing things like instant messaging or maybe social networking to a degree, we're seeing really high performance apps for things like Google Cardboard or high-end games and things like that. And as cool as these mid-tier devices are for just about every day-to-day task, messaging and social networking and stuff like that, you know, folks who use these as high-end entertainment devices are going to start to notice a difference as well. And while that's less important, it probably shouldn't be discounted in this conversation.
I don't think it's as much as you think. I mean, it's there. Games, you know, watching video, it's there, but not enough to make me not want to recommend these phones.
Sure.
Do you think any of this is cut into Nexus yet? And I keep thinking about how low the Nexus numbers are compared to...
Yeah, I mean, how can you cut into them much further?
Yeah, I mean, Nexus is still kind of deciding where it wants to be. It's gone almost the reverse of what we've seen other companies doing, where it started off as this really affordable thing. Well, it didn't start off, but, you know, a few years back it was with the Nexus 4, the first really popular Nexus. It was because of the price. And, you know, same with the Nexus 5. You still see loads of Nexus 5s in the UK. Now they're kind of moving in the traditional, you know, air quotes, flagship direction with the Nexus 6. And we'll have to see if they are doing two this year, whether they basically go with a Nexus 5 strategy for the small one and a Nexus 6 strategy for the big one. So they tackle the traditional high-end market with that. And then maybe the smaller one is Google's answer to this, this mid to high-end area where maybe it's a bit more affordable.
Which I would love to see. I mean, I'm going to catch a lot of hate for this, but the Nexus 6 on the software side still performs better than any other phone you can buy after the recent update. I mean, I've tried them. To me, it does. It's faster. It's smoother. Maybe it doesn't have the best screen or the best camera, but performance-wise, it's the best. I want to see what Google can do with one of these cheaper phones made from cheaper components and fine-tune their software to make it run as best it can. That should be a thing of beauty.
Well, the Nexus 5, the thing. Go ahead, Alex.
I was going to say the Nexus 5 with the current M preview is as fast as any current gen Android flagship.
Yep.
That was, I mean, that's the big thing with the Nexus program. We can say, you know, well, we're not really sure where Google's going. Google's made it really clear that every generation the Nexus phone brings one key element of the smartphone, you know, ecosystem forward. It's not necessarily a hardware thing. This generation was clearly a software thing. You know, the Lollipop was all about, you know, consistent 60 frames per second animation, consistent software performance, encryption, you know, and those things across the board. And they like Jerry said, they delivered that. It's still something that the other manufacturers are struggling to keep up with. And the previous generation was definitely cost. They wanted to show what was possible under cost, and I really feel like these mid-tier phones are the result of that.
Sure.
You know, so I genuinely believe that. You know, we've seen each generation of the Nexus phone has been, you know, a key element in which the smartphone ecosystem can move forward, going as far back as the Nexus 1 with a 1 gigahertz processor and what new things could be done with a 1 gigahertz processor and moving forward. So moving forward into the next generation, if we really do get two versions of the phone, You know, I don't think it's more, I don't think it's so much about, you know, showing the budget experience versus the premium experience with this next generation. I think Google is going to, you know, bank on these critical points in Android M, which is going to be, you know, kind of moving that polish forward in as many ways as possible.
Well, we're going to have a lot more coming up on the unlocked stuff. I mean, this, it's only growing as a space, I think.
Yep. And I'm lucky because I've been wanting to be done with carrier stuff for a long time. And when Phil brought this up, I actually salivated.
I get that reaction from people a lot about all sorts of things. Not really. Well, let's take a quick break. And when we come back, let's find a few things to yell at Andrew about since he decided to grace us with his appearance today. What do you think?
I showed up just to be a punching bag.
Start making your list, everybody. Be right back. Here's one of those advertisements in which we talk about advertisements, but specifically how we can help make them better for you. See, one of the reasons advertisers love the Android Central podcast is because of you. We have amazing listeners. So once a year, we run a listener survey to directly show them just how amazing you are. So I need your help. I need just 5 minutes of your time to take a new survey to help us learn more about the sort of advertisements you'll actually want to hear. Just go to podsurvey.com/android. It takes just 5 minutes. We're going to ask you a little bit about yourself and what you like to buy. Your answers will stay anonymous and they'll help us find advertisers that are better matched to you, your interests, and the show. And when you're done with the survey, you can enter a monthly drawing for a free $100 Amazon gift card. Even if you've taken one of these surveys before, you can do it again here and help make this show even better. So again, that's podsurvey.com/android and it takes just 5 minutes. Thanks again for the help. All right, are you ready? Who wants to start? Who wants the first swing at Andrew?
This was my fault. I actually take most of the responsibility for this because a couple of weeks ago, while all of us are still fawning over the G4, Andrew got his a little later than some of us and really just wasn't a fan. And he moaned about a couple of things. And a lot of people, like commenters especially, kind of give Andrew a hard time for never being like totally psyched out about something. But there were some things that he really didn't like about the G4, and I needed him to share that with people because I needed there to, like, it really felt like all of us really took a liking to this phone. Somebody had to not like it. It's a rarity that we kind of all universally love something when it comes to that sort of thing. And he did today, and oh my goodness, it has been just a torrential firestorm ever since.
How many comments are we up to now? And I tell you, I love the idea, and I did this with the... Did I do it with the G4? Yeah, I did it, I guess, as here's why I would buy the G4 over the GS6. So Andrew was just flat out, I don't like the G4. Y'all are crazy.
Well, and you also did a second opinion on the GS6 after my review was out, mm-hmm. which was also very, very good because you had used it for a longer period of time and had your very specific gripes as well.
And again, there's a lot of stuff about the GS6 that I like. There's a lot of little stuff that I don't. Kind of actually the same thing goes for the G4. And I mean, frankly, in this job, we're going to end up. What was that?
It was somebody coming to beat Andrew over the head with an umbrella.
Made sure to lock my door.
People are dropping from the roof.
Yeah. I mean, in this job, I think we're all going to kind of run into that anyway, because we use so many phones and have so many, just, we notice these little things a lot.
We're people. We're allowed to have favorites.
Absolutely. And I think we should. And yes. I have no problem saying that now, that I like this phone better than that phone. And I don't care if you disagree with me. It doesn't make either one of us wrong.
Even if you're wrong as hell, like Andrew was.
Except for Andrew. Andrew's wrong.
The back Absolutely. Buttons are the best thing that ever happened. And Andrew, you should feel bad.
I honestly, and this is going to sound silly, I really feel like part of the reason Andrew doesn't like the hardware design is because he got one of the plastic back.
I think so.
See, I don't know about that. I got the plastic, I was afraid that it was going to be as bad as the G3's plastic, but it's actually not that bad.
No, and I've got both of them here now. I mean, the plastic's different because it has, you can see them on the video here a little bit. It's got this kind of pseudo texture to it with the like polygons. But no, leather is better. It just is, period.
But Andrew's been wrong about back buttons since they first showed up. He's
but that's why I think part of the reason is because he's got a plastic back. Because one of the things that I found about having the leather back, and I actually confirmed this because I finally got a plastic back to try on my G4, is the way that I hold the phone is actually fundamentally different, because the leather is just grippy enough that it could just kind of rest in my fingers, whereas the plastic, it kind of slides. But the way my index finger sits when I'm holding this, the phone.
Do that again, Andrew. Look.
Like, this is how I hold the phone. I'm not, like, pushing buttons. My finger rests on, like, that rear key.
Yeah, it's the same thing for me.
But it doesn't when I'm holding the plastic version of the phone. I kind of have to grip it a little more because I'm concerned.
Well, it's a difference in materials, right? So you notice it.
So I think that is part of it. As silly as that sounds, I think you need to get a leather back. I may end up just sending you one.
Of all the things that I mentioned that I don't like, I mean, the software interaction
janky as hell.
More of the issue than the hardware. And my issues with the hardware are not necessarily, I mean, I don't have a problem with the plastic. Of course, there might be a usability issue with the difference in the plastic and the leather, but I have a problem with the shape of it and the size of it because of the way it's shaped. So, I mean, that's kind of an issue that I don't think leather can fix. If I can't reach across the phone, I want it to be shaped a little easier to reach across the phone.
So is that an issue you had with the G3 last year? Because it's obviously a different shape. It's curved. It's not flat. But it is a little bit more bezel-y than the G3. There's not that sense of they're just being basically screen across the horizontal.
G3 felt a little... I mean, to be honest, it's been a long time since I've used the G3, but when I used it, I remember it not feeling that large. But I think it's just the way that, you know, is really tight corners. So there's sharp corners that you're, you know, it doesn't feel like it's resting in your hand well. And yeah, the bezels are not that small on the G4. When you put it side by side with any other phone, they're not appreciably smaller. So, you know, this does just feel like a 5.5-inch phone, which is just for me a little too large.
Oh, hey, guy, sorry to interrupt you, but we have some breaking Twitter news. Taylor Swift has weighed in and says Andrew is 100% wrong and he needs to go back to using the G4.
Dang.
Phil,
I'm done. Jerry, fellow, look at Jerry. He can't even look up at me.
I mean, okay.
Here we are in the middle of a perfectly good conversation.
Yep. Now my heart is just dead.
I'd put a stop to that.
Jerry's on my side now.
Yes. The G4 sucks. Taylor Swift sucks. Everything sucks.
Well, see, that's the biggest thing. I actually said in there explicitly, I could use the G4 every day. I would not, you know, claw my eyes out. I would not hate every minute of it. It's just why.
That's good to hear.
Because that's how a lot of people took it. It's just the fact that I have all these, you know, I obviously have the luxury of having all these phones available to me to choose. And this one, you know, I wouldn't use the G4 if I have all these other phones that do more of the things that I like the way that I like them to be done. And I think that really came down to the software more than the hardware, and that, like, notifications are a thing that I interact with hundreds of times a day. And if they don't work the way that I want them to, then it's useless. So it's the rest of it's all moot at that point.
I kind of wonder if the rest of us have maybe been sort of weaned onto this software weirdness on the G4, and we don't really appreciate how jarring it is from someone coming from another type of phone, because it was worse on the G3 and the G Flex 2.
The narrative every year has been, you know what, it's gotten better. There's still some stuff that's less weird, but it's less terrible, so it's all right now. And yeah, I think you're right. Maybe we're giving it a pass just because we're seeing that improvement, and we remember the bad old days of foldery folders and just some really not good stuff.
And of course, we say the same thing about the way Senses progress and the way TouchWiz has progressed. Mm-hmm. If you're used to one thing, you say, oh, it's not that bad because you're used to the way of doing things. I mean, my issue was there are things that are just fundamentally broken about the interface and the G4 versus other phones that do not have just majorly broken functions. You can argue about the looks or, you know, how it fits in with material design, which LG does a pretty good job with that, but when it comes to actually using the software, there's an issue there. So,
Andrew, I have a Huawei P8 for you to play with.
So I use the P6 and the P7, so I know how horrible that can be. But
I think what it all comes down to is how much is Samsung paying you, and why are your hands so small?
That's it. Those were my favorite comments because Andrew is not a small person.
Andrew's hand will cover your face while you're making that comment. Trust
me. I mean, that's the thing. So I can hold a shield tablet like this.
Well, now you're just showing off.
But
can you palm a basketball?
It's just I can palm a basketball. Yeah.
Can you crush a watermelon in one fell swoop?
Oh, see, I haven't tried that.
Well, damn
time
it.
To go to the market.
But so,
why do you think Periscope was invented?
How many hard-boiled eggs can you eat? We're gonna go there. Let's just go there.
So those were the funniest comments. You know, that's like you're holding it wrong, kind of thing. It's like, well,
go back and find the video of me and Andrew standing next to each other at the Samsung Developers Conference. That's all you need to see.
Yeah. So it's just those are the weirdest comments. I mean, and I have a problem being able to reach up to the top of the G4 and. If somebody can actually comfortably hold the G4 and reach to the top of the status bar without shifting it in their hand, then they have some kind of like freakishly double long thumb.
No, it's all the way you hold it. My I don't have tiny hands, but they're probably not as big as yours.
But
I can do it.
But there's software
the in the middle.
No, there's software tweaks for that though, because you can add the button down there in the nav buttons to open that
button's up. Button's an abomination. That's not an excuse for anything. That is the worst thing.
I'm just saying you could do
that's
it.
That's just
I
an example of how broken the nav bar is.
It's a matter of how you like to use your phone, and this one just doesn't work for Andrew, and I'm glad it doesn't work for Andrew so he can point out reasons why.
Right. I mean, yeah, that was my main point, is that the phone works. It just doesn't work the way that I want it to.
And the
what are you
going to
hate next?
Is because you're wrong.
Yes. What are you going to hate next? Oh, man.
Oh, I don't know. I'm sure I'll come up with something.
Didn't you cause trouble on something else this week?
I'm sure. I reviewed the Galaxy S6 Active. Did I cause trouble there?
No.
Probably.
I don't think so.
I didn't. Apparently, I didn't mention the Active button enough.
Okay.
There wasn't a header image of you underwater rubbing it on your body. So.
Oh yeah.
Well, I mean, that was just my criticism, but. And that's only because I think I did. Did I do last year's or did I do the G4 Active?
You did one of them in the pool.
You did the GS4 and Jerry did the GS5 because I remember the camo. Phil had a blue one, which is the GS4.
Four, yeah.
Bright blue is like neon blue.
I took that. I tell you, I saw the old video of that in the pool with my kids. And like, how cool is that going underwater and back up? Yep. I'm going to take the re-camera in the pool with me this weekend, I think. Actually, no, Russell caught us a little bit. Russell, like, won the internet this week, actually.
Yeah, he did.
I don't want to talk about it.
He's just so ashamed of it, too.
So upsetting.
There's this if you haven't seen it, there's this horrible video. Or maybe more than one going around on
Facebook.
There
are several, but the one that I found first was by far the worst.
I think you found the anti-Semitic one, so like I don't
go viral on Facebook.
Yeah, I don't recommend you go and watch these. But it was these guys who were saying that, oh, hey, look at this. We found this chip hidden inside the Samsung battery, and they're spying on you and taking all your pictures. And I mean, maybe they are, but not through the NFC antenna in the battery.
I wish you would round these people up and let me beat them over the head with a cane.
These people were in Alex's backyard. It's Alex's responsibility to handle them. This video came from the UK. I hold you responsible. Well,
sir. Really?
Yes, it really did.
Conspiracy theories aside, there was nothing hidden. It says it right on the GD battery. What's there?
Yep, right there.
NFC antenna.
Field of communication.
It's been that
way.
But
it was so great. You peel the battery off and you see this copper thing, and the guy was just like, this is how they steal all your information and they send it to the government. And I was like, man.
No, that's not how they do it.
The whole time, because I only buy Cheetos and beer with this thing.
And the funniest thing is that if you just paid attention when you set up your phone, they always do a huge thing about turning on NFC, and you get a warning when you turn it on. It's in the quick settings. So if you could have put two and two together about the acronym NFC.
I just love that this is our most important story of the week. It has won the internet.
It's not.
Makes me cry inside.
Angry.
I'm glad Russell wrote it, because I would have written it and had a perfectly fun time doing it.
That was the thing. I had fun writing it, and I published it, and I went, well, that was cute. Let me go get something that I actually care about done. But no.
It's a buzz-up worthy, viral Nova story.
As everything that goes around on Facebook with any large amount of momentum.
I'm just going to peck around Facebook and find more stuff to make Russell right now.
I'm so glad you hired Russell.
All right. Tell you what. Let's take one more break. When we get back, we will do some voicemails and some Q&A. I see you, Q&A. You guys are still there. We'll talk more Taylor Swift, maybe. How about that? Should we?
No.
Could we? Maybe. We'll see. Hang on. We'll be right back.
Music question.
Patience. We'll be right back. At this point, everyone understands that in the right situations, open source software is important technology. It's useful and it's powerful. No one really disagrees with that. I mean, the most successful open source project of all time is this little thing called the internet. Maybe you've heard of it. Tim Berners-Lee put the www in the public domain. Then, of course, there's Berkeley Unix, TCP/IP, BSD Linux, Android, the Internet of Things. You get the picture. The only real disagreement is whether open source can be used in an enterprise situation to do the most important work. Well, Red Hat has been settling this debate one customer at a time for more than a decade. They started with Red Hat Enterprise Linux, and today they certify and support application development, storage, and cloud infrastructure for every conceivable enterprise deployment. The New York Stock Exchange, DreamWorks, each and every airline, healthcare company, and telecom giant in the Fortune Global 500, they all rely on Red Hat. In fact, more than 90% of all the companies in the Fortune 500 are Red Hat customers. Why? Because they get the powerful, constantly improving innovation of open source without the risk of having to do it alone. It's that simple. Red Hat, enterprise software trusted in the world's most demanding data centers. Find out what they can do for yours at redhat.com. Russell was holding something up there. I don't know what it was. I mean, it was
I was trying to get Jerry's attention.
Oh. What was it? It was a BSG thing.
So Battlestar, they included in Loot Crate this month was a pair of Cylon range sheets, like for a gun range.
Whoa.
Yep.
That you can hang out. And it came in this really neat envelope. It was Battlestar Galactica range sheet for range facility use only. I think I'm going to hang them up in the house somewhere. They're really neat.
Lucky that didn't get you a visit from the feds.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of Cylons, Taylor Swift.
Stop!
How about that? How about what? What? Poor Russell's losing it there. Look at that.
Stop giving her the attention she's craving so much. Just stop.
I want to know, and if you don't know the context, she started tweeting that her record, which has been out since last October, so if you haven't heard it by now, you're not missing that much by it not streaming.
I could have told you the day it came out you weren't missing much by not listening to it.
Hey, I bought it. Because my 8-year-old daughter loves that woman, which is great. I'm not going to tell my kid she can't listen to music, even though it sounded to me like it's what it. You know what? Axl Rose got off the bus in L.A. and you get Welcome to the Jungle. Taylor Swift goes to New York and you get what sounds like a 14-year-old writing in her diary with producers. I'm just saying.
Not far off.
I'm just saying. But yeah, I'm never going to tell my kid she can't listen to it. So I bought it. So I've heard it. I can weigh in on this record. I'm not a fan of it. It's also not my kind of music, but whatever. But she, you know, she tweeted, "Hey, you know, artists aren't getting paid enough for streaming." And I think everybody can agree with that. I mean, there's any story anywhere you've read, you know, will demonstrate that the money is just crap when it comes to that. So apparently Apple had a change of heart and now she will be streaming her record. And we need to check again before we leave. Maybe one of you guys can do it right now because I can't. But supposedly, somebody said it's going to be streaming on Google Play Music too. In fact, when you go to the album page, it says it's available for streaming. But when we looked this morning, it wasn't.
It's available for streaming, not available for streaming on Google Play Music All Access.
It's available to stream if you purchase it.
Okay. Gotcha.
Or just like if you bought it on iTunes and then uploaded it to Google Play Music.
So here's my question. And as I keep asking myself this week, I'm torn. Yeah, I go back and forth. Should I care? Should I care about the deal between the artists, or more specifically, it'll be the deal between the labels and then, you know, whatever company is distributing the music?
That's the biggest thing.
Right. Do I, as a consumer, as a music listener, as somebody who's paying their money for this stuff, do I care about that deal?
You know, I cared more before this obvious publicity stunt between Taylor Swift and Apple. I want everybody to be fairly paid for their work. But when you all of a sudden come out and tell me how you've cared about this for ages, but you've never said anything before today, and then the biggest company in the world magically does a 180 in just mere hours, I don't buy it. You're feeding me a load of crap, and I don't want to hear it anymore.
And, I mean,
so I care less now.
Can't tell me they didn't have that conversation before this week.
No,
that's the funniest thing is that now that it's come out, they were on the phone together already. It was something that was already ongoing. They had made a decision. They had gone back and forth a couple times. I mean, Apple didn't come up with its streaming rights deals and its payment during the trial period like over the weekend. This has been going on for weeks and months. They've been hashing this out this whole time. There's always been an opportunity for them to talk.
And I think even outside of that possibility, even if there was no discussion there, as soon as this becomes as widely reported, then it's very easy and very cost effective for Apple to turn this into a big publicity win.
And I'm sure that if Taylor Swift's, you know, sitting on the couch and says, get Apple on the phone, pretty sure that they can get Apple on the phone for her.
And I agree with Jerry. Already, you know, any musician needs to be paid for streaming stuff, and it's obviously too low. And I mean, I've got all access, but there are times I still buy albums if I know I'm going to listen to it a whole lot and it's somebody I really like. But yeah, I mean, I don't care. You know, do I worry about book deals between writers and publishers and Amazon? I don't care about that. When
I just want
Taylor. Russell has a different feeling. I was about to say,
well, that's the only reason that I cared about this music thing was because I could tie it into something else in my life.
And it's not, well, I mean, it's not that it's unimportant, but I mean, me as a reader, I don't care about the author's, I don't care if the author got a better deal from one publisher than another. That's on the author, right? That's not, do I have some sort of moral imperative to, it's entertainment, right?
Supposed to be. Now the most entertaining part is watching everybody say how we were right all along, but we've changed our mind and we all love everybody, when in fact they all just love money.
Or, I mean, my thing this week was really how, you know, suddenly the whole Apple fandom gets up in arms about this on one side or the other. And I, you know, absolutely believe that, you know, you have to pay these people more. You have to. But, you know, with this whole Confederate flag thing, Apple starts, you know, just killing any app that, you know, like Civil War games, you know, when you have this offensive thing in context and it's the devs who are getting dumped on there, nobody said a word.
Nope.
I think that's what really got me this week.
Well,
I mean, and that's just an example of the different practices that everybody that runs an app store has had,
you know, sure.
randomly taking apps out of the store for, I mean, it happens on Google Play, happens on Amazon, happens on Apple. These apps get wrongly pulled out of the store. You have developers losing money. And in those situations, sometimes it's just one or two people. And they, you know, there's not this cushion of the label or anybody has taken a cut either. That's 100% of that money is just not going to them anymore. And you know, nobody's talking about that angle. And that's just as big a market when you're talking about a couple of music artists.
And we're just going to go back to not caring tomorrow.
Yeah. That's the kicker. None of us really care. We just want to, and I don't mean anybody in particular. I mean, collectively, the internet. We don't care. We just want something new to complain about today.
Right. Well, and as soon as Apple Music is available and they can just start using it, especially with 3 months free, they don't care anymore. They're just going to sign up and take it.
I'm just missing what the Apple Music. I mean, the only new thing there is this radio station stuff, which isn't new. It's just radio.
Well, there's a whole. It's weird. I get the vibe that people say, "Yeah, Apple's taking on the streaming industry." No, they're not. They're jumping feet first into the bandwagon so they can make some money.
And they're also
taking on. You mean taking over?
Right.
And taking a 28.5% cut of everything when if they really wanted to do somebody a favor, they could have taken 20%. They could have taken 15%, which still would have been a nice bucket of money. They still take, just like everybody else, the 30% cut of apps too, yep. App sales and subscriptions through the App Store. So, I mean, if they wanted to do people a favor, they could, but they're doing themselves a favor as any company that needs to make money with shareholders would.
And I don't begrudge them the fact that they found a way to make money.
No,
that's
not at all.
That's what they're supposed to do.
They've been doing it with selling music this whole time, so now it's just streaming.
And to their credit, they're not saying, oh, we're doing this in such a way because we're good people. They're saying, hey, look, this is our cool new service. This is what we have to offer. And they know that they're going to make money on it. It's other people that are saying how Apple is doing it different and better. No, they're not.
I think there was a pretty good breakdown of, they saw because of this three-month free trial, they were going to give 71.5% to the labels, who will then take a large portion of it and distribute a small amount to the artist, versus 70%, like what you would see on Spotify or wherever. And, you know, that takes 8 years just to break even on that, because they're giving them a three-month free trial. And at that point, it's still just pennies and fractions of a penny on top of that.
Apple is not giving us a free trial, nor is Spotify giving us free versions, because they love us. They know people will use the free trial, set things up the way they like it, find out they like the service, then pay for it every month afterwards, because people do that.
We're seeing the same thing now with the free tier of Google Play Music. It's just getting more people to get their account hooked up to that and get used to it. And then you say, yeah, these ads kind of stink, and I would like to listen to anything with as many skips as I want and no ads. And then all of a sudden you're on the hook for $10 a month.
And that's fine. I mean, that's
right. It's not a bait and switch. Yeah. It's just
right. That's how business is supposed to work.
But, I mean, there was the similar system already with Google Play Music if you uploaded your own music, but now this is just another way to experience Google Play Music for quote-unquote free.
I get concerned when I see, you know, people on the internet trying to convince me that Company A is doing this for me because they really care about me.
No.
They never are doing it because they care about you.
And if you care about the artists and how much money they're making, you're not doing any of them any favors by signing up for a $10 a month streaming service. You're doing them slightly more of a favor than listening to them on Pandora or the radio, but that's about it.
I'm not going to buy.
I just know we got to get Taylor Swift on this deal limit problem.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
She needs to tweet somebody about me not being able to use it on a new phone.
Hmm. I'm not going to buy every record, you know, of anyone I ever listened to, but you know, I love the convenience. Charge me more. Charge me $15 a month and say, you know what, we're going to take, you know, we get that it's a little more expensive than these other services.
We'll take away that DDoS limit and we'll charge you $5.
Well, I mean, I'm not even talking about that. I'm just saying.
I'd be all over that.
Tell me you're going to up the percentage and then, you know, fine. But I just don't care. I really don't.
So we need to charge Phil more.
Just
me. We need to change the way artists get paid, and we need to make the icon a Confederate flag, and everybody's happy.
And I mean, here's the problem with that. So if Google Play Music says, okay, we're going to give you the option to spend $5 more because it's going to go, you know, it's going to go into the same pot, but now there's more money there. Now the record labels are just going to refresh their deals so that they take a larger cut. The artists will get paid the same, and then the labels just get paid more now. And you're not helping the system at all.
You know what I want them to do that would help and I would find convenient? If I'm listening to something on any music service, if I dig deep enough, I can find a link to buy what I'm listening to. Put that sucker on a button right up front where I can tap it, Google Wallet, boom, click, Jerry, you just bought this.
And that's the problem, is there's an issue with Google Play Music All Access, at least, is that you just get everything. And there's a very small portion of things that are for purchase only and not available on All Access. And so you don't come across them all that often. And it just makes it sound like $10 a month gets you everything, which it gets you pretty much everything. And then there's never that jump to making it easy to buy the things that you don't already own. Or you don't access
to. The dividing line is really harsh there too. Like if you go to the Google Play Store,
it's a different store.
Stuff up, it is. It's completely different from the store that you look up. It's a weird dividing line, and there it shouldn't be. There should be, you know, I should be able to listen to an album on Google Play Music All Access and go, I need to own that, and you know, have it be something that you know.
Which you can download a copy and upload it to Amazon or whatever.
You know, and that's sadly that's what I use iTunes for right now. Is my kids come to me and they go, man, I'd really like to have this album on my iPod, or I'd really like to have this album on my tablet. iTunes is the first place that I go because I can push a single button, and especially on their iPods because of the family setup in iOS 8, It's immediately on their devices. There is no extra work for me. Whereas Google Play, there is no functional way to do that right now. And I really hope that that's something that they give more consideration to as they start to move towards this whole family friendly Play Store thing. I hope that that's the next step that we see.
I've been trying to decide what to do for my 8-year-old daughter like that, because I mean, from time to time I'll get her like a gift card and give her some money that way, but it's, you know, I don't want to put her on All Access yet, because that's, you know, that adds up, and she doesn't appreciate what that is yet. But
dude,
what?
Give her the Mobile Nations Amex.
So many in-app purchases happening there.
No. I've got a specific account for her, so it's totally separated from everything else. But
it is an important point that there's no real family sharing system or anything like that. The best thing you can do is give them a Google Play gift card, and that's it.
Yeah.
And I will say, like I've said it a couple of times, this last generation, Apple nailed that. The way that family sharing works in iOS right now is just the best. I wish that there was something like that on Android.
Just wonder what kind of magic they had to use to get movie studios and record labels to be okay with it. Because yeah. I think that's the stumbling block for anybody else to do it.
Yeah, it couldn't have been easy because it's everything. There is no, mm-hmm. This publisher doesn't allow that. It's every single thing in the store, movies, music, games.
And that's where Apple is great at things. If they could have only done part of it, they would have never released it.
Right.
They held it, worked on it, and made it so, okay, boom, it's going to work everywhere. Here it is. Magic, I tell you, magic.
Yeah.
Damn it, now I got Shake It Off stuck in my head.
Serves you right.
That's what I get.
I don't know. I give him credit for the Cylon merge over.
How about that?
That was pretty good.
I was just thinking leggy, but that's just me. Oh, I miss BSG. My wife and I love BSG. Man. Now I'm going to go watch it this weekend. She'll be like, where'd you go? Nowhere. Watching Cylons again.
No, you already told me what you're doing this weekend, and I just can't believe it.
I don't remember what that...
Your 1990s music movie preview thingy at the mall.
Oh, that's next. No, it's not at the mall.
Whoa, so
you didn't actually see what it was. No. So
we
have this really cool music venue here now. Actually, I haven't even been in it yet. It's called Vinyl. And next Friday, let me find it because I want to get the name right. It's 90s night, and they're screening Mallrats. And Jeremy London's going to be there. So anyway, Alex is like, who? Andrew's like, who? So anyway, I think the wife and I are going to that.
You lost me 5 minutes ago.
Oh. All right, tell you what. You want to do some Q&A and voicemail, and then we'll get out of here?
Yeah.
Actually, I have new toys, so guess we could do a little bit on that.
Yes.
Xperia Z3 Plus, we will have a review of that next week.
Where's your oven mitt?
we'll get to that, the sort of heat issues this has supposedly had. I mean, it's a Z4, basically. It's the Japanese flagship.
If only they had used the cool version.
Well, they did use the cool version.
Cool.
Well, there are two versions of the 810. Supposedly one's cooler. I don't know. I mean, it's fundamentally a very, very similar phone to the Z3. I think the name in Europe, Z3 Plus, is kind of a nod to the fact this isn't really a full upgrade beyond the Z3. We're probably looking at another 6 months or so for that. Earliest will be September, October. Similar kind of design. I think they've kind of slowly pared this design down to the point where the sort of fluff and, you know, extraneousness of, you know, the edges and stuff of the Z2 and to a lesser extent the Z3 are slowly being whittled away, and instead you just have this metal band, plastic corners, but glass front and glass back, and it's understated, it's classy, it looks nice, it's very very thin, thinner than the Z3, and very light as well. It's a nice phone, but it is a phone that is a kind of a weird half upgrade, in some areas a step back, and of course there are issues with this as well, like we've heard with the heat and the, you know, specifically heat in certain instances causing the camera to shut down. That can happen. It doesn't happen very often, but if you've been for example, running a demanding game or installing a bunch of apps or charging or doing all three at the same time, then you launch the camera, you will get a heat warning. The other side of that is it's running at a Snapdragon 810, and it's running the CPU in a way that is, it doesn't really match up with anything we've seen before. It's running it with 6 cores enabled most of the time. For some things, it will get all 8. But the general way that this phone works is the standard way it operates is just with 2 high power cores and 4 low power cores as opposed to 4 of each. And the upside of that is you get better battery life for most things because it's, you know, there are fewer places, fewer high power cores using all that juice. The downside is there's just less raw performance there than the Rate 10 phones. And you are, of course, paying for an octa-core phone that isn't using all 8 cores and everything it does. So, I mean, you can see why they did it, but at the same time, it does kind of speak to the issues that a lot of, we've kind of been seeing to varying degrees with some 810 phones. It's a nice phone. It is not a bad phone by any means. We could complain about the fact that the camera is still the same basic setup. But it's just kind of a decent all round high end phone with a couple of weird issues to it. And that's kind of a shame because Sony needs a good phone now with the state that the company's in.
Andrew, this is the important part. Andrew, thumbs up or thumbs down. Come on, give it to me.
I'll at least wait till I see.
Oh, no.
I don't have to use it. We can't have that. At least see it in person.
No.
There it is. It's a black rectangle.
And go look at the Z.
Like every other Sony phone, it's a black rectangle.
Exact same.
I mean, it's a black rectangle, or it's a white rectangle, or a copper rectangle, or a green rectangle sometimes.
Right. Omnibalance.
I don't know how they're going to get away with such a radical design there.
We have one for the U.S. It's a bit different.
Yep. It's federal Confederate flag.
No, stop it. Stop it. They took it down. They raised another one today.
Hopefully a rainbow one, yes. Just because.
All right, let's do some voicemail and Q&A before the hate mail starts coming in.
Yeah, hate voicemail and hate Q&A.
All right, here's a voicemail from Mike.
What's up, Android Central? This is RF Mike, and I'm recording this using audio recorder on my Android Wear smartwatch. Now that Asus has shown us its to-be second-generation Asus Zen Watch with an unknown Qualcomm processor, do you think we'll finally start seeing two-day battery life or better on this watch? And what are your thoughts on the upcoming Moto 360 that we do not know anything about? Are we hoping to finally start seeing some better hardware improvements on that watch and any other smartwatches in the future that will run Android Wear? Let me know your guys' thoughts. I'm curious to see what I should purchase next when it comes to Android Wear smartwatches.
I mean, my answer, having seen the Zen Watch 2 in real life, is that neither of those two watches really exist yet. And if you're getting caught up on what is actually inside the Zen Watch 2, all that has been out there so far is just these dummy units, which are running the demo loop, which could have anything inside them.
Let's be clear, it's totally a Snapdragon 300.
300? Is that a...
Probably. The cool version.
Yeah, the cool version.
I don't know. I don't think we have anything coming from Qualcomm that's going to... dramatically double battery. I mean, I don't think it even needs to be from Qualcomm. It needs to be the screen. It needs to be the battery, right?
Bingo. That you want it to be a watch and be always on your wrist, and you have an LCD display.
And you want it to be thin and small.
You're not. I mean, just charge it every day. Bite the bullet. Realize you have to charge it. It takes what, an hour to charge these things from zero to full. Just do it and be happy and use it. The Pebble can get away with lasting longer, but when you look at the screen compared to an Android Wear watch, you know exactly why it can get away with it.
And we were talking about this in our roundtable on Android Wear this week. It's, you know, what's going to come first, I think, is smaller, thinner watches. There's more demand for that than multi-day battery life, especially as more people use smartwatches and more people get used to the battery life constraints of them.
Correct. We're tech enthusiasts. We're okay with what we have now, and oh, cool, it looks, this doesn't look bad for a smartwatch. How many times have we all said that? But none of these watches look good to people who don't, you know, they care about what's on their wrist.
And the LG Watch Urbane is still huge.
Yes.
Not
it's,
true.
It's really not any bigger. No. Yeah. It's really, I mean, the lugs are big compared to.
The whole thing is really big.
Nah. It's not. You're right. God, do you get tired of being so wrong?
It's just because it's an LG watch, right?
Phil, strap all these watches to your arm and go to a jewelry store that sells fine watches.
Oh, yeah.
Look at the difference. There is a huge difference, and the important thing to these manufacturers is going to be to make their product look more like these products that everybody wants. And that makes sense to me.
And do we have any hints on what we would at least like in a new Moto 360? I think the flat tire going away is probably the obvious one.
Yeah.
And I mentioned before, I may have seen a prototype. I saw a device at Google I.O. on somebody's wrist that was not a 360, but looked like a 360 with some words and numbers on the side, and one of them was Motorola. It just looked like a slightly thinner, just as big around 360 without a flat tire. So, you know, that maybe the direction they're heading, maybe that was one they decided they didn't like and they're making something else. I don't know.
I don't know.
Yeah. You should stop lying and show us what's on your wrist.
It's kind of interesting, though, because Lenovo had their crazy, I forget what the name it was, but essentially a smartwatch with a small display in that works like Google Glasses display that you can hold up to your eye like this. It was an insane prototype design, and it had the flat tire, so...
Maybe the next version you'll be able to put it inside cardboard.
Put two of them inside cardboard.
I mean, for what it was, it worked pretty well, but you're still going to look like an idiot holding this up to you.
As an aside, how cool was it that caller recorded that whole thing on his wrist that it actually sounded really good?
That was the first thing I was going to say. That actually sounded like, and I could have cleaned it up a little bit if I'd wanted to, but it sounded really good on its own.
It sounded great on his wrist. That really just goes to... It speaks to how nice the microphones on these watches are, which is
cool. I mean, I've never had a problem with the dictation, but, you know, I've never recorded it to hear, you know, exactly what it's hearing, so that's cool.
Yeah.
It was crazy. All right, let's do some Q&A, then we got to get out of here. Anthony wants to know, do you think that Google will follow Apple and offer Google Play Music in a family tier where you can allow multiple users to use the service for a price? I'd like that, but
that'd be nice. Free.
I think Google would like it too, but it's going to be, can they get the business deals in order?
Well, Russell just nailed it, though.
They made it free. They made it ad-supported. Yep. So, I mean, what do I care if my kid has to listen to ads to get to music?
That's a very good point.
I mean, there's that point, but then there's also, you know, you and your significant other, or you have a more grown-up child or something that you think doesn't need to be seeing the ads and you're willing to pay.
Then they can get a job.
That's right. I mean, Andrew, one day you'll have kids and you'll realize, screw them kids. Ads for you.
But the interesting thing is, I mean, their family tier is it $25 or $20? Either way, you start getting a discount as soon as you hit three people. So, I mean, it's not unfathomable that you could have three people that, you know, you want to get a discount with.
Three people across three different hardware platforms. Which is non-trivially significant.
Yeah.
Like, that's...
Right. Yep. We haven't... I have a gut feeling that you're going to need to use your Apple ID on your phone when you... You know, it's not going to tie into any of your existing accounts once Apple Music comes to Google.
Sure. So, well, they're just going to whitelist multiple accounts as being authorized by this one account who has the credit card that's paying.
It'll be done on some hopefully hack-proof server somewhere in the iCloud.
Two from Ashish. How about that firestorm Andrew created with his LG G4 post? The comments were hilarious. Hold up your hand, Andrew. Just hold it up. Show the ladies and the men. There you go.
But the comments were hilarious. Some of them... very few were appalling, and then the rest of them were pretty good.
You just pretty much described the internet, by the way.
Only 10% of them maybe want to peel my skin off.
I don't know what the exact ratio was, what that pie chart looks like, but
Ashish also wants to know how we feel about the new T-Mobile Jump program.
It depends. How do you feel about leasing every phone you own forever?
Yeah.
That's all the carriers are asking you nowadays, actually. Right. Yep. I mean, Sprint has done this iPhone for life and Galaxy S for life kind of thing. It's the same thing. You just lease it until the new one comes out and you give back and you get a new one.
I think John Legere has done a masterful job starting off with this thing where he was like, man, you can upgrade your phone every 6 months. And then, man, you can upgrade your phone every year. And then, man, you can upgrade your phone every 18 months. And then you don't even own your phone anymore. We'll just go ahead and give you a new one whenever you feel whenever you're feeling up to it. I think it's insane that he's managed to convince everyone that this is somehow better than the way that AT&T and Verizon are currently doing business, and that he's somehow less evil than AT&T and Verizon for behaving this way. And everyone buys it. It's just as ridiculous as his assertion that you know, giving people free music from a select number of services is not the same thing as violating net neutrality laws. It is. The things that John Legere is doing, because he's got a really funny attitude and he's got some incredible wisecracks, it's so easy to do the smoke and mirrors thing, and it really bothers me. I would love to have a sit down with this guy, but I doubt that he would enjoy the conversation the same way. Come at me, bro.
I would pay money for Russell and John Legere in like a ring somewhere after that.
He's a really smart guy, and that's the thing, is that the whole homespun, you know, smart aleck, drop a swear word every once in a while has got so many people fooled.
My favorite part of that really is it's like journalists have never heard somebody curse before.
Right. Like, that other CEO is full of ass. Where's my fainting?
Blog.
And the problem is that T-Mobile does a lot of cool stuff if you just want to buy a phone off contract and use it, and they're super simple to use.
They're actually one of the best in-store experiences.
And they used to have some of the most confusing array of 200 different plans to choose from, and they whittled it down. And then all of a sudden now there's dozens of different plans and dozens of different ways to pay for your phone. And they're going overboard with that. They really need to stick back to what we had in like 2013, where they're really just cut all the crap and just got to the basic stuff.
They're also by far the easiest carrier to just walk in and get a SIM card from.
Yep.
Like, you want a prepaid SIM for something, you just walk right in and go, hey, I want to put a SIM in this phone. The one behind the counter didn't even ask what phone I was using. She was just like, oh, okay, cool. I'm gonna do a prepaid. I don't even need your first and last name. Let me go ahead and set you up. It was basically a burner SIM. It was really cool.
5 or 10 minutes, even with a postpaid account, you're maybe 15 minutes. They'll hand you a SIM. They don't care what phone it's going in.
So Mark Jackson says the hate is strong with Andrew. Not to totally cut you guys off.
He's right.
Andrew, hold up your hand again. Can you get lightning to shoot?
It's got a G4 in it. Oh my gosh.
Can lightning shoot out of your fingers or no?
No.
Is the word Samsung tattooed on your body somewhere?
Victor wants to know, between the recent deals in the Moto 360 and the Asus ZenWatch, which one would you choose? I would choose ZenWatch.
Yes. And I like the 360.
I do.
Better,
yeah. If you don't have one yet, it's not very smart to get a 360 at this point.
The 360 is now the end of its life.
Yeah.
Yep.
And it never performed as well. I mean, insofar as these tiny little things need to perform well, it just never performed as well as
the original G Watch still kicks its butt.
Yeah.
Yep. I mean,
I still feel like it's got a little bit better with the 5.1.1 update.
Yeah, I was really surprised at the wrist gesture things, like, consistently, and they actually work pretty smoothly. Mm-hmm. Like, It's actually kind of cool.
I do feel like some of that jank that just builds up after a while, they've cleared some of that out, and it's at least stable and relatively smooth with what it is. But I do think you've got to question how much more can you really do with the hardware and that thing.
And we're all pretty sure new hardware will be coming from them. And they were pretty open about they had difficulties getting the software to work on this product. So don't be surprised if that's the end of time for this product. It just is.
Yep. Patrick wants to know, are we ever going to get some useful third-party apps in the Nexus Player, or is it dead in the water already? It's gotten a lot more apps since.
There's a ton of apps.
Yeah, but I don't know what kind of apps you're looking for.
Spoiled for choice, really.
It's the same thing. You open up Android. I open up Android TV every other day, and it looks different every single time in the Play Store. There's all kinds of stuff.
Is it time for me to buy a new AV receiver and hook it back up yet?
Might be.
Okay.
Joey wants to know how sad Jerry is since you got rid of the Z3 Compact and now you could run the M Preview on it. Ouch!
Not even just the M Preview. That was still, I think, one of the best Android phones I've ever used for various reasons. But it was just, it will soon become irrelevant for me in my job, and it was time to get rid of it and find a new home for it while it was still relevant to somebody else. I would have loved it.
Jerry, do you want to hear the latest hot rumors online for the successor to that?
No.
Save that for next week. We got to get through these questions. Mark also says the S6 Active is what the S6 should have been from the beginning. I disagree.
I don't think that's true.
Yeah.
I mean, sure, they could have maybe landed somewhere in the middle.
So the S6 should have been big, ugly, and had horrible software on it? I'm down.
I think that there's definitely could have been room if they're going to go with an S6 Active to maybe do a Motorola and go with an S6 Max as well.
Oh, yeah.
Ooh.
That's exclusively to a carrier anyway. I mean,
it's not for me, but I love the fact that they are offering something for everybody. You want the Edge for the futuristic, you want the S6 for its iconic looks, or the Active because you might beat your phone up a little bit. Go Samsung, do it.
Yeah, my only issue with it is that it's exclusive to AT&T. That's all I really care about. If it was more readily available, you can easily just say, yeah, get whatever, you know, choose which one you want. I mean, Samsung doesn't have to make one phone that appeals to everybody.
Yes, they do.
Without buttons on the back.
Yep, buttons on the front.
On the buttons on the bottom from now on.
No buttons, nothing. All touch.
All capacitor buttons on the back.
Yeah.
Oh, you made it worse.
Help me, Taylor Swift, help me!
Joby is a terrorist.
And with that, I think we're done.
Yeah, Russell just ensured Alex will never be able to visit New York again.
Oh boy. Look at Alex. It's not often that we get him to go that red in the middle of the night over there, but that's pretty good. All right. Well, with that, I'm calling it. Sticking a fork in it. We're done. Alex is saved. For now.
Podcast title, Alex is a Terrorist.
Oh, no.
No, capacitive buttons on the back.
Oh, no.
He's got something. Yeah, it's going to, I know what it's going to be. And I'll never forgive you already.
All right.
Taylor Swift is a Cinnabon.
Yes. So, we've still got this Galaxy S6 contest going until July 3rd. If you haven't seen it, we've got big links up on the top of the blog. Go see that. What else is going on? Hey, I'm actually kind of having more fun with this Android Auto app series lately because I'm running in some interesting things. Check out the one this coming Sunday on NPR One. There's been a weird leap between app and like car app. And it's not a lot to say, but like they don't always translate quite as well as we think. What else do we have?
I should have at least one device review next week, called the Z3 Plus, maybe this Oppo R7 as well.
Cool.
If you want to see what it looks like when I ramble for like an hour about Google Glass, you should check the site tomorrow.
Uh-oh. This will be good.
Because I got as salty as I got on this podcast this morning I sat down and just kind of oozed onto my keyboard for 2 hours. And
you've been on Twitch lately.
I have, yeah. We're doing Twitch stuff. I think Jerry and I are going to try to get together this weekend and do something.
What do you call it? Is it twitching it up? Are you twitching?
I don't know.
What's the verb?
Streaming.
You're old.
Twitched. I don't know.
What? How do you kids do it on the Twitch? Are you on the Twitcher?
The same way when I open Twitch, I do not know what's going on.
Are you twitching?
I open up the website.
So much wrong in this podcast. All right, go go follow us on all the things, Instagram.
Get ready to watch Phil fire up Periscope right after.
Go follow us on the Facebook and the Periscopes. and just follow us on all the places. Jerry, Alex, Russell. Jerry, Alex, Russell. Andrew. I forgot Andrew. Sorry, I had to count.
Andrew forgot Andrew at the beginning. So
Sam Drew.
Andrew minus Sam Drew.
Sam Drew. I saw it in the comments. It's
oh, my God.
I got to go vote on that one.
So wrong. That's it for this week. I don't know how we can top it next week, but we will attempt to. So everybody watching the video, thank you. Everybody listening later, thank you guys too. Taylor Swift, thank you so much. See y'all next week.
'Goodbye.
I hope that he got that in the end. Oh my God, I hope that Jerry's super sad goodbye made it to the end of the podcast. That
just total dejection.
Taylor Swift, make it stop.
That was so good.